morning. It is time to get up with Colin Kaepernick. At least one NFL team has interest. Which one? And what will it mean if they sign it? We're on it. Then, a Hall of Fame quarterback has serious words of caution about what we can expect from these two legends this year. You'll hear it all. And which of these quarterbacks has the best talent around him? That answer could decide the Super Bowl. And we have it as we get up with you on ESPN. Starting right now from Bristol on a Friday. Mike Greenberg here and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. We welcome all of you who've been watching Korean baseball. We will be with you until 10:30 Eastern this morning. So a little over 2 hours of Get Up for you, and then First Take will come your way in its entirety. We begin with Get Up and Go on a busy morning. The NCAA Division I Football Oversight Committee passed a six-week practice plan on Thursday in order to kick the season off on time. The plan now heads to the Division I Council for approval on June 17th, but they're working towards it. The NHL and their players have announced that formal training camps for the 24 teams resuming play will begin on July 10th, as long as conditions allow. The league says it will determine the length of camp and the NHL's actual return to games at a future date. The NBA is firming up the schedule for the Orlando restart on Thursday. The regular season games now scheduled to resume July 30th. 14 of the 22 teams that will be invited will be eliminated within the first 53 days of the bubble. And as far as team rosters go, they will look slightly different than what we're accustomed to. Teams will be allowed to bring as many as 17 players to Orlando, and playoff rosters will consist of 15 players. Teams will also be able to sign free agents, both who were and were not on NBA rosters this season, to any open roster spots. And then we get to the NFL. Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll told reporters yesterday he regrets not signing Colin Kaepernick back in 2017. And while Carroll said he's happy with his current quarterback room, he did hint there might be a team interested in signing Kaepernick right now.
I'm going to tell you something. That after all of the time, that you know, the years that have passed, I never received a phone call about him. I never talked to another head coach about it. I never talked to anybody about it until today. I got a phone call today. I'm not telling you who it was, but I got a phone call today asking, inquiring about the situation. So I know, you know, somebody's interested. So we'll see what happens with that.
All right. So this feels like a good place to start this morning. Lewis Riddick, Jeff Saturday, and our insider Dan Graziano are with us right off the bat here. And Dan, I will start with you. What are we hearing about the interest level in signing Colin Kaepernick right now?
Haven't heard much about interest in Kaepernick until Pete Carroll said that yesterday. Don't know what team he's talking about and how serious the interest is. Calling around on all this stuff over the past week, where will the owners and teams come down on the commissioner's comments on social justice and Black Lives Matter and peaceful protests? There, I have been asking questions about Kaepernick. Haven't been getting the sense that there's a strong chance of him getting back in. I definitely don't think that we're going to see anything like we saw last November, where the league tried to arrange a workout for him for teams in Atlanta. I think it's going to be up to an individual team to decide and make that decision to bring him in. At this point, the team that called Pete Carroll yesterday, we don't know who it is. We're working to find that out, and ideally we'll figure out how likely it is before too long.
All right, Dan Graziano, sit tight. I want to talk to these guys about two separate pieces of this. Lewis, well, I'll start with you because it feels like there were two separate stories with Colin Kaepernick. The first is just what it would mean in the bigger sense for Kaepernick to wind up back on an NFL roster. Lewis, how would you put that into words?
Well, I think obviously, Greeny, there are people looking to the NFL to really make good on something that they created 4 years ago by blocking him out of this league and not allowing him to continue his career because of how they perceived, you know, him protesting racial injustice and police brutality. And I think many people feel as though, you know, in the end, they owe him. They owe him big time. And right now, up to this point, they haven't made good on that. They owe him the opportunity to come back and resume his career after it having been taken away from him for reasons other than his play on the football field. So I think for some people, it would be something that needs to happen. For some people, they would feel as though that it's not authentic. It's just an opportunistic move. It's just something that they have done their proper risk assessment, and they have assessed that at this point in time, he's not, quote-unquote, bad for business like they thought he was back in in 2016, you know, back in 2016. So that's the number one thing that I think right now that people will really have to kind of really, you know, just kind of get straight in their head whether which way they fall on this and how they feel about this. And you know, I kind of go back and forth. Obviously, the NFL owes him much more than what they have given him, and he deserves an opportunity to come back to the NFL and play if he still wants to play, which every indication is that he does. They owe him that opportunity. I just wonder whether or not, you know, people will ever really give the NFL or whatever team it is that signs him the credit that normally you would give someone, considering the fact that it just seems like a very opportunistic move at this point in time.
Jeff, what do you think it would mean if Kaepernick signed?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Lewis more. I think as you're talking about what Kaepernick means to players in the locker room, you've heard guys' voice, hey, we would love to see Cap get an opportunity. And what Dan said earlier about, I think it will be individual teams who will potentially work him out. But for some, like, to Lewis's point, does it come off as opportunistic because you finally give him a chance 4 years after this all began because now he's, quote, not bad for business. So I think ultimately this will be a decision that Kaepernick will have to make for himself. So very interested to see how this thing plays out if he does get an opportunity to go work out for a team.
And Dan, this of course will be up to owners or an individual owner, but do you get a sense after Roger Goodell's statement of a week ago tonight that he and the league office are feeling pressure to find a way to get Kaepernick back in?
Again, I don't. I think that, look, I think people acknowledge at this point that that it would be nice to find a way to get him back in because his absence has become a stain on the league. And I think the workout that they tried to put together in November was an acknowledgement of that, of like, let's see if we can do something to sort of goose the process here, that being the perspective of the league office. But as we know, it didn't work out for a variety of reasons. And I think there's probably a bad taste left in the league's mouth and in Kaepernick's mouth as a result of how that all broke down. So I don't think we're going to see something similar. I can't rule out the possibility of a team deciding to do it. And of course, you know, that would be a huge story. But I think to Lewis's point, we're really in a very different situation than we were 3 and 4 years ago when signing Kaepernick could be viewed as an opportunistic move versus a bad for business move. I mean, that's a complete reversal of how his presence on a roster would be viewed by the outside world. And I think that says a lot about what's happened here over the past month in not just football, but in the country.
Oh, no question about it. I totally agree with that. So that, let's then turn our attention to the football piece of this. And Jeff, this time I will start with you. If you were on a team and your team signed Colin Kaepernick right now, as far as the football piece of it, what would you think you were getting?
He's going to be a backup quarterback to come in first. I mean, you know, ultimately he's been out of the game for a number of years. You know, most teams are set as far as their rosters are, the way that they're, I mean, especially with COVID and all the implications that thing has had involved in teams, virtual meetings, all those different things. It would be very, very difficult for him to get up to speed with any football team this far kind of into it. And so, you know, as he's coming in, that would be the role that I would expect that the teams are bringing him in for. And then is that situation one that he could potentially fight for a starting role? And I'm not sure from Kaepernick's perspective, is he looking to be a starter immediately? Would he be willing to take that role as a backup and then come in and get an opportunity to play? But I think everybody who's bringing him in right now would be bringing him in as that role, that 2-3 QB. Where can he be in our room? Can he help us with the knowledge that he has as a starter in the league? You know, from a game plan perspective, you think about what a backup quarterback does. It's not just what he does on the field. It's all in the meetings. It's breaking film down, giving perspective of what he's faced, what teams have done against him in this look, and what teams and defense coordinators might do. So as I look at it from a strictly football perspective, what he could bring to that backup QB role could be very important for some football teams if they decide to head that way. But that would be my feel would be a backup QB.
Yeah, Lewis, you would be in the role that where you would be making the decision to do this. From a football standpoint, mm-hmm. What would you be signing him with the intention of having him do immediately?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think first and foremost, when you just strip this down strictly to football, you're looking at someone who hasn't played football in four full seasons. Four. I mean, the last time a quarterback came back after having significant time off that I was a part of was like when I was in Philadelphia in 2009 when we signed Michael Vick, you know, after him having missed two full seasons. And this was someone who was still, so I mean, two full season removed versus four full seasons. And it took Michael, you know, time to get his body back in the football shape and then assimilate himself into that system, into that culture, into that football team in Philadelphia. And then it was in 2010 that he actually took off and had the best season of his entire career. Cap has missed four full seasons. So I think anyone's expectations at this point, if they tell you exactly what they are, they're lying. They're kidding themselves because they have no idea how he will assimilate himself into that particular system, that particular team, where he is at physically, and whether or not he is someone who then would be best suited for a backup role, whether he's someone who still has starter type ability. I mean, you're just guessing right now. So I think the first thing you would have to do, first and foremost, is bring him in and assess all these types of things, assess where he is at physically, assess where he is at mentally, assess where he is at from an expectation standpoint. There are so many unknown things. And here's the thing, though, in this situation in particular. This is a very unique year in the fact that, you know, we do have the COVID-19 situation. We have situations where teams have not been in the facility. So it's been very unique and odd in that way. We have a dearth, or rather, you know, we have a lot of extra quarterbacks on the market right now. We don't have the demand to kind of eat up all those extra quarterbacks that have been on the market. I mean, Cam Newton is still sitting out there right now without a football team. So it's not a good situation in that regard for Colin Kaepernick as far as supply and demand. But I think this is a situation that really you would have to really go very slowly with and very methodically with. And that's why I think, look, at this point in time, I just don't want this situation to be one where a team tries to hijack this situation and make it something that's opportunistic for him. Because remember, 4 years ago, for lack of a better phrase, he was considered bad for business, and all of a sudden now he's not. So, I mean, because it's opportunistic for you, there's just so many layers to this right now. But from a pure football standpoint, I think this is something that has a lot of twists and turns to it as to whether or not he's good for certain teams.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, look, we'll continue to talk about this and we'll watch it because he is obviously someone who has come to represent something far larger than football. We move forward here. Another big story. NFL coaches have been making their returns to team facilities as the league has sent out guidelines outlining the procedures for the full reopening of practice facilities. But Ravens head coach John Harbaugh yesterday, perhaps speaking for everyone, said these guidelines are a lot easier said than done. This is what he told Baltimore's 105.7 The Fan. I've seen all the memos on that. And to be quite honest with you, it's impossible what they're asking us to do. Humanly impossible. So we're going to do everything we can do. We're going to space. We're going to have masks. But you know, it's a communication sport. We have to be able to communicate with each other in person. We have to practice. And so, Dan Graziano, I will start again with you as our insider. What are you hearing about the concerns that NFL players and coaches have about some of the restrictions that are being placed on their ability to come back and work?
Look, I think everybody believes it's going to be difficult to configure their facilities according to the recommendations that were sent out earlier this week. I think it's important for people to understand that the memo the NFL sent out early this week to establish some standards for what facilities would have to look like if and when players are able to return was not considered by the NFLPA to be a finalized document. The Players Union was surprised that document went out, and they feel like there are still some questions to be answered. So I think that John Harbaugh's concerns, such as they are probably being shared to a certain extent by other coaches. Let's just take the locker rooms, right? You're supposed to have 6 feet between each locker. In training camp, teams usually add extra lockers to their locker room because they have so many more people there. So obviously you're going to need to find solutions in terms of how you structure your weight room workouts, etc. But I think everybody views it as the other option is to not play. And at this point, I think the NFL is in a situation where 5-6 weeks till training camps would start, they still have the opportunity to figure out what's right and wrong about these recommendations, to look at what other leagues are able to do. But I think in terms of John Harbaugh, I think he's going to have to accept, and all coaches are, that a lot of things are going to have to be different, and they're going to have to work around some very unusual restrictions if they want to get back and play at all in 2020.
Yes, and obviously playing is the objective here. The objective is not just to be able to come back and meet in person again. The objective is ultimately to play. And from the beginning of this pandemic, I've been saying here, I'm going to be optimistic because that costs the same as being pessimistic, so why not? But I'm also not going to be unrealistic. I'm not going to lie to my audience. Jeff Saturday, you played football for a long time. And in the game of football, you breathe on each other, you sweat on each other, you bleed on each other. So at some point, we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that there's no room for social distancing in football. And that's either going to wind up being okay or it isn't, right? I mean, that just strikes me as the way that we look at it.
You're 100% right. And what Harbaugh said is 100% right. There is no way. I mean, from a meeting perspective, you can do all the things. But let's never forget, coaches are schedule freaks, right? I mean, they want everything dialed out long before their teams get there, or they want to walk through every possibility of what could come up to distract, to deter from the best or from the betterment of their football team. So what Harbaugh's saying is, listen, we have all these memos being passed out. We can't realistically get this done. And to his point, from an offensive line perspective, we have to scream to each other constantly. Our face masks get really close. They're having discussions in the huddle. All of those things. So does it change? Do they put things over our face mask to block those things up? There's so many unknowns. And where that puts Harbaugh is a very uncomfortable position, because coaches don't want anything left. No stone left unturned. And so I think it's remarkable that he's actually saying these things, because I can guarantee you all coaches are feeling the same pressure. They don't understand how they're going to get this accomplished. I mean, he's talking about shower time, lifting weights, all the different things that I don't think a normal fan would think about. It's not just when you're on the practice field. It's when you come back in. How much time can you spend together? How many guys are going to be around and allowed in a room, in a weight room? So I love that he's discussion started, but I'm on the same page as you. I think the testing is going to be the most important, understanding if make sure guys are testing negative. But once that is, there's going to be an amount of risk that is undertaken by these football players. And I'll take it a step further from an offensive line perspective. You know, I've read articles about that body mass index matters, how COVID affects different people. So does it affect offense and defensive linemen differently because of our sizes, as opposed to skill guys outside? There are a number of questions that as guys go and are going to have to get. It's not just a coaching question. It's a player question that all these guys are going to have to come to grips with. Is it worth the risk to go do this? So in light, I'm the same as you. I'm optimistic. I want guys to be out here. There are so many conversations that are still being had. I think from Harbaugh's perspective, the frustration is you want the answers. We're not that close to there. We still have many steps, and it may be last minute answers that everybody has to deal with simultaneously, and everybody has to adapt to, because that's the world that we live in at this moment if we want football.
What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, look, I think in the end of the day, there's never going to be a perfect way to resume playing outside without there being a vaccine readily available for everyone. There just isn't. There's going to be some risk involved no matter how much you try to social distance, no matter how much you try to do things from a virtual perspective as far as meeting time and keeping people apart and limiting the amount of people that all get together in one place. I mean, there's just going to be risk, because at some point in time, football is one of those games where people in close proximity to one another, and players and coaches alike and owners and everyone in the league office is going to have to come to grips with the fact that there is going to be some risk involved here. Look, I understand what Coach Harbaugh is saying as far as the logistics of it all, as far as how can you get 90 players in the typical NFL facility and keep them properly spaced out to where you are minimizing the risk without severely compromising how you are able to really conduct business in a professional way. It's hard to marry the two, and I know that there are facility operation managers right now that are pulling their hair out. There are people who are involved in the administrative part of this as far as helping coaches plan out a training camp that are pulling their hair out and going, just like John Harbaugh, how can we possibly do this? Well, the only other option then is to not play, and we don't want to go down that road. So you're going to have to figure it out, and you're going to have to assume some risk. Otherwise, we're just not going to have football, which is something that nobody wants.
Correct. Exactly. I respect the heck out of the fact that they're trying as hard as they possibly can, and I hope more, as much as absolutely anyone, they can figure out a way to do it. But during a pandemic, I think if there's one thing we've learned, there are always a lot more questions than there are answers. All right, we will just get started here on Get Up. A lot more to do. Coming up, if you're expecting big things from Brady and Breeze this year, one Hall of Fame quarterback says, think again. You'll hear who that is and why in a moment. And then, Patrick Mahomes, seen as the best in the NFL. What is the one ingredient that is so vital to his success? We'll answer that question and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Get Up is brought to you by Creamy Snickers. You're not smooth when you're hungry. And by Pizza Hut. From our hut to yours. Order today for contactless delivery, carryout, or curbside pickup. Well, the wait is finally over. We have moving video of Tom Brady in a Buccaneers uniform. The local news in Tampa sent a chopper up to shoot aerial footage of Tom Brady working out with his teammates. It is right now just 93 days until we see him take the field with the Bucs for week one of the NFL season. And our NFL Nation Bucs reporter is Jenna Lane. So, Jenna, you have a story up right now of the new combination of Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. What will be the big difference for Brady as he goes from what he has been doing all these years to this new offense?
Yeah, Greeny, this isn't a knock on Bill Belichick. Obviously, he's one of the best, if not the best, to do it. But Bruce Arians has some very unique skills when it comes to how he works with people. We've already talked so much about the X's and O's combination of Arians and Brady, but we really haven't talked about the personal connection that they're about to have. And right now, they've only been able to do that through Zoom, through phone calls, text messages. But when these two get together, which is going to be in about 6 weeks when training camp starts, I think you're really going to see their connection take off. Bruce Arians doesn't just pride himself on having a personal connection with his quarterback. He views himself as a pseudo-psychologist. That's what he gets from all his years spent bartending, in which he analyzed people constantly, understanding what buttons to push, really listening to them pour their hearts out over their day's worth of problems and things like that. He views that. He views himself as a pseudo-psychologist and understands that that's very much what he's going to be doing with his quarterback. He'll tell you he wants to be tethered with his quarterback at not just the hip, but at the heart, too.
I loved the story, by the way, for those of you who have not had a chance to read it. And there is no better training for understanding people's psychology than by tending bar. So I like the idea of it very much. Now, meanwhile, Arians is famous for his no risk it, no biscuit approach. Do you expect that to be the offensive philosophy with a 43-year-old quarterback?
I do. And so many people have said, we don't think that he has got the arm strength that he used to have. But I talked to Tim Couch about this, and he was a guy who Arians coached when they were with the Browns. Couch said that Arians was able to get his best football out of him. And he said, you know, in college and early on in my career, I wasn't throwing the deep ball. But Arians didn't let that stop him from calling some of those home run plays, those deep pass plays, because he believes in taking those shots. Even if it's third and two, he says if your quarterback gets that one-on-one matchup on the outside, you better take that chance. His philosophy is, you know, never waste an opportunity to crush the spirit of an opposing defense. For a quarterback like Tom Brady that has done so much throughout his career, to have that kind of attitude and really have no training wheels, no limitations on you, that's very, very invigorating. I'd also say this, and I talked to Tim Couch about it, I talked to Teddy Bruschi about it. They really think that what we saw from Brady in recent years in New England was more a function of working with all those slot receivers, as opposed to guys like Randy Moss, who we had earlier in his career. And he's going to get that with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Oh, and of course, Rob Gronkowski.
All right, it'll be very interesting to watch. Jenna, thank you very much. Coming up next, Carmelo Anthony said he is, quote, up in the air about playing in a bubble. What a league do if a lot of players feel that way? We'll answer that question next. Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
It is Sunday night on ESPN. Our next 30 for 30, long gone summer, McGuire and Sosa and the PED scandals that followed. Sunday night, 9 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. And as we reach the top of the hour here, 9 o'clock in the morning in the East, I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol, Connecticut. This is Get Up on ESPN. We have another hour and a half for you, 90 minutes of our program, and then First Take will begin at 10:30 Eastern Time for a full 2 hours with them. And we are busy this morning, and we have the news covered for you, not one, not two, but three different ways. There they are. Jeff Passan, Dan Graziano, and Zach Lowe are ready to go. And Lowe, I'm starting with you. Here we come. As many as 40 to 50 NBA players have recently expressed concerns about restarting the season in the Orlando bubble, though no one has formally asked out of the 22-team restart. Carmelo Anthony says he's still not 100% sure he's going to play.
As far as actually playing and going back down into Orlando, I'm still up in the air a little bit because I really don't, you know, we don't have all the details. We don't know a lot of information. So until we have that, it's kind of hard to just, you know, commit to it 100%.
All right, Zach. So Melo says he needs more information. What can you tell us about the NBA's plans for the event that perhaps a breakout were to take place or a large number of players on one team were to test positive?
Well, first of all, I think the information is going to come soon, maybe as early as today. Second of all, you know, that's the $64,000 question. What happens if 6 of the 9 best players on the Bucks get this during the conference finals? I'm not sure those guidelines that come out are going to have an answer to that question because all you have to do is look at the calendar. Right now, Game 7 of the NBA Finals is scheduled for October 12th. Next season is going to begin sometime in early December. That's a very short offseason as it stands. And to delay a series, which is probably what you're asking, will they delay a series? There isn't a week or 10 days in there of wiggle room unless they're willing to push back next season even further to delay a series. So I'm not sure what those guidelines are going to say. The answer to that question, it might be there is no answer right now.
Well, that's fascinating because, and I said it earlier this morning in the program, in a pandemic, there are always more questions than answers, and we all accept that. But as we get closer and closer to this happening, I have to believe the players are not going to be comfortable with, well, we don't really have an answer to that question yet, right? I mean, someone has to make some decisions, even if they are subject to change in the event of circumstances beyond their control. They have to have some sort of plan in place for that, right? Otherwise, the players, I can't imagine a player being comfortable without having a firm plan.
Well, they're going to have plans in place for everything. I mean, we can talk about what they're going to do with Disney staff and X, Y, and Z. But they're also going to get down there and think about, oh my gosh, we didn't realize that parameter. But you know, the scary answer to your question, the depressing answer to your question is, if those guidelines don't have anything for the question of what happens if 6 players on the same team get it at the same time, the answer to that question might be you stop. You just stop the whole thing and there is no time to pick it up. And that's a very depressing answer. But again, I'm not saying that's what the answer is going to be. But if there is no provided answer, you sort of read into it and think maybe that's actually it.
In the meantime, what can you tell us about the Disney staff being quarantined and tested?
So that's the other big question, right? You get the players, the staff, you quarantine everybody. Everyone sits isolated and the virus doesn't get in or out. But you have all these Disney staff that are going to be driving them, serving them food, cleaning their rooms. My understanding from teams and the understanding that teams have is there are going to be kind of tiers of Disney staff. The staff that is going to be interacting with them most closely, think about, I'm guessing, bus drivers, stuff like that. I think those people are going to be tested, maybe not daily, but frequently. I don't know how many of them will actually be quarantined. Below that, you have the staff that's not going to be interacting with them as much. My educated guess and what teams are guessing or hearing is that those people will not be tested with anywhere near the same frequency, but when they are anywhere around the players and the coaches and the staff, they will be wearing masks, they will be distanced. So to sort of compensate for maybe we don't have daily tests or whatever for those people. That's the sort of guesses that are out there.
Fascinating. And if you really stop to think about it, look, we're all just sports fans. And if all we care about is the games, and that's fine. But if you really do stop to sit back and think about the magnitude of the undertaking here for all of these sports, and we're talking about the NBA, to bring all these people into a bubble and try and pull off an entire NBA postseason. It's remarkable. And look, we just sit here and hope that they can make it work. Zach, thank you very much. We'll check in with you a little bit later. Let me get to baseball next.
Thank you.
Major League Baseball still has not made a counter to the union's 89-game proposal from earlier this week. This despite Rob Manfred, the commissioner, telling our Carl Ravitch the other day that he is, quote, 100% sure there will be baseball in 2020. And I am holding Jeff Passan's feet to the fire. I have been telling Jeff from the beginning that it is his responsibility to make sure that we do have baseball. So as we wrap up our week here, Jeff, what should we and fans be expecting to happen between now and when you and I are back together again on Monday?
Well, clearly, Greeny, I'm doing an absolutely terrible job at this, and I apologize for that. But look, the expectation is that Major League Baseball is going to send a counter offer back to, or an offer back over to the union today. The question is, as has been the case with all of the offers, what exactly is this going to entail, and how close is it going to get to fully prorated salaries? We have seen that that is the hill players are willing to die on. This is not a bluff. This is not a feint. This is them saying the most important thing to us is that we get paid the wage that we were promised in our contract. And if Major League Baseball is not willing to go there over a particular number of games, there's not going to be an agreed upon deal. So MLB needs to move a little bit, not just in the direction that the players want with games played, but in the direction that they want with those fully prorated salaries. And if they get anywhere close to that, I think at that point we're going to have a negotiated agreement. Otherwise, 48-game season, 50-game season, 55, get somewhere in that vicinity that Rob Manfred is going to implement.
Let me just make sure I understand this quickly. The concern the players have over anything short of prorated salaries is that it starts to tiptoe towards a salary cap, right? Is that their primary concern, is that that doesn't become something that turns into a salary cap down the road?
No, you know, it's more this idea, Greeny, that the players feel like they have been bullied, taken advantage of. You know, you look at certain things that have come into play over the last few years. For example, the flattening of the free agent market. As someone put it to me, the fact that when you hit 30 years old, teams look at you like you have a walker. You know, service time manipulation with Chris Bryant, a perfect example of that, one day short of being a free agent a year earlier. All of these things have compounded on themselves in the minds of players. And what they're saying right now is we're not going to take it. It is a very Dee Snider moment for them, and they are standing on principle here saying that this is it, this is our stand, because we have a collective bargaining agreement coming up at the end of 2021 that we need to negotiate, and we don't want to give the owners the idea that they're going to continue to be able to push us around.
I'm glad you made the Twisted Sister reference, because I thought of it and I wasn't going to have the guts to say it. So I'm glad that you did. All right, Passan, thank you. I'll see you Monday, and hopefully we'll be getting a little closer to this by then. Let me get to the NFL now, where the league yesterday pledged to donate $250 million over a 10-year period to increase its social justice footprint. The pledge expands the initial deals that owners struck with the Players Coalition that likely would have surpassed $100 million during its term. Meanwhile, yesterday, the owner of the Tennessee Titans, Amy Adams Strunk, released a statement saying, quote, "I support our players using peaceful protests and their platforms to advance us as a nation. I would encourage those who haven't thought about these issues before to understand the pain, anger, and frustration of the black community. Black lives matter. We should all agree on that." So, Graziano, why should we believe that things will be different this time with the owners as opposed to last time?
Well, I think the central message is coming from the commissioner's office as of last Friday, when Roger Goodell released that video in response to the players' video a day earlier. I think because of that, there's a sense that this is the position the league is going to take on this, and that the owners are probably going to have to get in line behind what the commissioner is saying. Now, that's not to say you won't have stragglers. It's not to say you won't have an owner here or there who speaks up in a way that doesn't reflect the commissioner's point of view and the point of view of the majority of owners when it comes to something like, say, kneeling in protest while the national anthem plays. That became a huge issue with NFL owners 3 and 4 years ago. But going forward this time and talking to a lot of people in those circles over the past week, it sounds like it's not going to be dealt with the same way. It sounds like it's not going to bring the owners the same kind of angst about bottom line concerns, right? I mean, TV ratings, if they went down as a result of this 3 years ago, which some people will tell you they did, some people will tell you they didn't, even if that were the case, for instance, the NFL expects that if it plays in September, its ratings are going to be through the roof because people are going to be so starved for the product. So it just break it down to those cold bottom line terms. Those concerns might not be as significant this time. But the bigger point is the shift, as we discussed earlier this week, in what the sort of mainstream position is on this. The shift that you saw in Drew Brees' point of view in a 48-hour span last week. I think the people who own these football teams recognize that where we are as a country right now, where the NFL has come out on this, where NFL players have come out on this, it's important to be on the right side of it. And I think that's where you're going to see more statements like what you saw from Amy Adams Strunk.
Well, that's interesting to me because I did see one from Cal McNair, who was the owner of the Texans. Someone sent that to me. We saw Shad Khan talk briefly last week, and then now this from Tennessee. So that would be my final question here. Should we be expecting to hear these kinds of statements coming forth directly from other NFL owners in the coming days?
Coming days and weeks, I mean, to the extent that they make themselves available in off seasons, to the extent that they make themselves visible in off seasons, I think there are people who feel that they have to speak out. I think there are owners who are trying to figure out what their statement should say, specifically the wording of it, et cetera, before they put it out. But yes, I do think that over the coming days and weeks, you will hear from more specific team owners in terms of not just teams releasing statement, but the owners actually putting their names to it.
All right. Well done, Dan. Thank you very much. Around the world of sports we go here at a very busy juncture on this Friday. Meanwhile, tomorrow night on ESPN, UFC Fight Night live from Las Vegas featuring number one ranked flyweight Jessica Ai taking on Cynthia Calvillo in the main event. The prelims start tomorrow 6 Eastern with the main card starting at 9 on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. Coming up, if you are a fantasy football player, you got to think long and hard about taking Baker Mayfield high this year, and I will explain exactly why coming up next. But first, our buddy Hembo has one for Graziano. I love it when these two go head-to-head. Which NFL team's skill position group scored the most touchdowns from scrimmage last season? That's the question, and the answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Napa Know-How. Father's Day knickknacks. That funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
We're back on Get Up, and Sneaky Hembo has one for Graziano. And here we go, Dan. Which NFL team's skill position group scored the most touchdowns from scrimmage last year?
So I'm texting with Hembo in the break because I said, this seems obvious. And he said, skill position is running back, receiver, and tight end. And so I thought, quarterback's not a skill position anymore? So I was going to say the Ravens, that seemed obvious, but since we can't count Lamar Jackson's rushing touchdowns, he's obviously not a skill position player, I'm going to guess the 49ers.
Well, guess what? The answer is still the Ravens by one over the 49ers. That's how close Graziano was. The Ravens had 51, the 49ers had 50, Tampa and Dallas came next. Oh, the pain etched on the face of Dan Graziano, bringing great pleasure to our buddy Hembo. Okay, this is the reason we were talking about that, because Bleacher Report released an article that we liked. It ranked every quarterback's supporting cast of skill position players. And it should come as no surprise that Patrick Mahomes came in at number one with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and now rookie running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire leading the way. As for the rest of the top five, Baker Mayfield and the Browns offense came in at number two. Breeze and the Saints are at three. Brady and the Bucks are at four, and Dak and the Cowboys round out the list. And I'm just going to throw this out there to begin. Here is my thesis. Lewis Riddick, you tell me what you think of it. If you put Patrick Mahomes on a team that had the Browns' weapons, we would all be saying Cleveland has the best weapons. They've got OBJ and Landry. They have two outstanding running backs in Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And people forget that they have David Njoku, the tight end, because he got hurt and missed basically all of last year. But he's a guy who looked like he was becoming a star a couple of years ago. The question is whether there are enough balls to go around for all those guys. But to me, Lewis, I would actually put the pure skill position group of Cleveland at number one. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's an argument for it, and I think really, okay, this is assuming, obviously, that OBJ and Jarvis Landry are healthy and David Njoku is healthy. So all those things being equal, there's no question there's a ton of talent right there, and I think the thing that could really put them at the top in the perfect world is the fact that they have two running backs that are absolute studs in Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Those two guys can make the difference. That's probably the best 1-2 punch in the NFL as far as dual threat runners and receivers. So I think when you put all that together, this is why the Cleveland Browns are one of those teams that people get annoyed about in the offseason, because on paper, they have so many things going for them. The problem was they couldn't protect the quarterback. The quarterback couldn't get into a rhythm, and they had a terrible head coach. So that kind of really can take all that those things on paper, just throw them out the window. And that's why if you put Pat Mahomes on this football team, our first question I'm going to ask you is, well, who's coaching him again? Because if it's Freddie Kitchens, I mean, come on. Come on. So, I mean, but I think that's what separates them. The fact, and then this year, they add guys like Austin Hooper to the tight end group. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So they have all kinds of weapons galore, but we all know this. Look, coaches ruin players as much as players ruin players. And Kevin Stefanski, that's why he right now, if you want to talk about a spotlight being on a coach this year, it's going to be on Kevin Stefanski, because we're having arguments just like this. And we haven't even, look, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if they had right now a bona fide number one runner that was a dual run pass threat that Tom has been, you know, used to having, those kind of running backs who can catch the ball out of the backfield and run like he's had during his entire career in New England, we'd be talking about them scooting right up there behind Kansas City as far as having the best perimeter skill set group in the NFL. So we'll see what happens here. But this is what annoys people about the conversation surrounding the Browns. Because we always put them up there. They're talented, they're talented, they're talented. And then what happens? That's why I've learned my lesson with the Browns. I'm going to take it easy on them right now. I'm just going to sit back in the weeds with these guys this year until Kevin Stefanski. So just in case Kevin Stefanski decides to make me look like an idiot.
I'm going the opposite way. I'm going to die on their hill. I'm picking the Browns in a big way this season. But, Jeff, let me come to you, because Lewis and I see the same thing differently, which is to say he sees all of the pressure being on the coach. I see it on the quarterback, because the first thing Lewis said was, well, the coaching was bad. Well, they addressed that. The offensive line was bad. Well, they addressed that. There's nobody left now, Jeff, in my mind, to address except the quarterback. If Baker doesn't get it done this year with that group, then the finger's going to be pointed at him. So to me, Jeff, the pressure's on Baker Mayfield. What do you think?
I think quarterbacks get too much positivity when they win and negativity when they lose. And you fall right in it, Greeny. I mean, you just heard what Lewis said. I could not agree more when it comes to coaching. Coaching matters. Do they have that problem solved? We have no idea. If you're a Browns fan, you're sure hoping so, right? Because you understand, you've seen four head coaches in 3 years for Mayfield. You've seen new OCs come in. Now, obviously, with Van Pelt, you're hoping that thing works. But as you're looking at this, everything falls on his feet, the frustration of the fans. But the reality is, it takes an entire group, an entire organization to get behind that offense to turn it really around. And so I couldn't agree with Lewis more. I think when you look at sheer talent, that's great. I would also throw the Chargers in that same mix. If you talk about two really good wide receivers, a good tight end, a running back who can do it all, you're talking about it. But the same issues, right? Offensive line couldn't protect Phillip Rivers last year. You may have a rookie starting there this year. There's problems. They're not even in the top five. Here's another point. Three of the top five teams are 500 or below that are in the top five. So I think that shows you football is just not skill position. I love that we're writing articles about it. But let's make sure we don't forget offensive line matters, right? Running game matters. All these things matter because it makes those skill guys better. We are true skill positions. Understand that. Put us in that same argument so we can have a full argument about it. But, you know, I think you know, he's always going to take the flak until this team turns it around.
By the way, the Chargers, I believe, were
sixth. Can I jump in here real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let me just say this though. Here's the real real deal about the Kansas City Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire may make this football team illegal. They may have to outlaw the Kansas City Chiefs if this young man lives up to the potential that he has. Look, I'm telling you this. When I watch this film, I know some people are going to be like, what? You're out of your mind. When I watch this film, I saw a guy from a body type perspective and the way he could move who looked like Barry Sanders to me in some respects. Okay, I know that's huge, but I'm telling you what, in the context of this offense with that quarterback and that coach and those skilled people, they could be illegal this year. You may have no shot stopping this football team. None.
And I'll say this.
Period. Case closed.
No one does better facial reactions than Dan Graziano. Dan, jump in. Final thought.
Barry Sanders? You got to be. All right, look, I'm glad I'm not on Lewis's bad side,
man.
Like, you know, Freddie Kitchens. That would be an unfortunate place to be when you talk about slamming a guy already got fired. That's kind of rough. Look, Greeny, you listed all those Browns skill position guys. You didn't even mention they signed Austin Hooper, the tight end from Atlanta that had a great year last year. They are absolutely loaded. And I know from talking to people in that organization that they felt if they addressed the offensive line and, of course, you know, as Lewis mentioned, addressed the coaching issue, that they could be a lot better. And, of course, they signed Jack Conklin in free agency. They draft Jedrick Wills in the first round. They think they have the offensive line figured out, and they believed that they are going to be scary.
It's a fun conversation. I'll leave it there. We'll come back with much more as we go. More football on the way as well. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are preparing for the season. His coach is speaking up about a concern all teams have, and it's a big one. We'll get into it right after this. Get up on ESPN.